Today's program has been brought to you by Cane Vineyard and Winery, a Napa Valley winery committed to respecting the soil and dedicated to the creation of three Cabernet blends. For more information, visit cane5.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm Grace Bonney, and you're listening to After the Jump on heritageradionetwork.com. We're coming to you live from Roberto's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, and you can listen here every Monday at noon or download the podcast on iTunes. Today, my guest is the artist G.B. Tran, author of, among many titles, the incredible graphic memoir Vietnamerica, which was awarded the Society of Illustrators Gold Medal for Sequential Art, the 2011 Fellowship for Nonfiction Literature by the New York Foundation for the Arts. It was also listed as one of the top 10 graphic novels of 2011 by Library Journal, and Time Entertainment listed it as one of their top 10 graphic memoirs. So I thought I would just kind of plug you up a little bit before we start talking. So thanks for being here today, GB.
Thanks for having me.
So I wanted to set up how I met you. I met you at the Museum of Comic and Cartoon Arts Festival in New York.
Yep.
I believe you're going to get Indian food on a break.
Yes, that's it's one of the highlights of doing MOCA every year is because I get to get Indian food, because it's right in Curry Hills, so you
exactly
know.
Exactly, what's not to love? And we have a mutual friend in common, illustrator Alex Ebenmeyer.
Yes.
Who has been the source of many wonderful people in my life, and I'm glad that he introduced us, because that's how I got to buy and then read your book. Not just because we share the same initials, but I also really liked Vietnamerica.
Oh, wow. I never realized that.
Yeah. You wrote that. I made you sign my book. And then you wrote from one GP
I like
to
how
another.
You said that very threateningly. You're like, I made you sign my book. You had
when
no
I find
choice.
Similarities like that, I force people to celebrate them. So for those people who aren't familiar with sort of what it's like to be, do you consider yourself like a cartoon artist? I feel like that's a word that I sometimes has negative connotations, and I'm always afraid to use it.
Oh, no. I wear the mantle of calling myself a cartoonist very proudly. Okay. I mean, that definitely sometimes results in some confusion, because when you introduce yourself to someone saying, oh, I'm a cartoonist, they think, oh, what cartoons do you do? Like Simpsons
exactly.
or something like that. And then I have to say, well, actually, I'm a cartoonist, meaning how I define a cartoonist is someone who basically writes and draws their own work, and those two aspects of the work are inseparable. Like, they can't just write and they can't just draw.
That's a really good way to explain it. So for people who are unfamiliar with that as an art form, can you walk us through a little bit of like what your average day is like?
Right. Well, average days right now are very unusual, because they're spent with a child that refuses to sleep. But when life was a little bit more normal and a little bit more predictable, I worked from home. So we'll just sample a typical day that went into Vietnamerica. So I would just wake up, and then just after doing some type of morning exercise, because I thought it was really important to get out there to get the blood going before you sit at your drawing table for the next 15 hours, I'd go back and literally just do that. Sit at my drawing table, and depending on what I was working on, whether it was inking or sketching or coloring, then that's just basically what I did all day long. And in many ways, it was one of the most linear and probably bland work rhythms in my life, but on the flip side, also like by far the greatest time of my life, because I knew, like, every time I go to sleep, I would be very excited about waking up the next morning, because I knew as soon as I woke up, I could just start inking right away or just working on this project. And I didn't have to take on any freelance work or anything like that, for the most part, during the time that I was working on it.
That's fantastic. So for people who aren't familiar with the process, when you're saying inking, is this something, are you doing everything entirely by hand and then digitally?
For Vietnamerica, everything was done analog, with the exception of coloring. So I drew it with pencils, I inked it with actual ink, and then I applied tonal washes just with ink, so they're black and white gray tone washes. And then once that was all done, it was scanned in and then colored digitally. So
that's, well, I want to wait just a little bit before we get into Vietnamerica, because it's such a big, heavy thing for me to talk about. I'm very excited to talk about it. But I was reading, you've done mini comics, which is something that I sort of love and have in my background. Yeah. And you've done adaptations of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. And you've done everything from Vietnamerica to also creating a book about your morning emails.
Yeah.
Is there sort of, I love the range in your work. Do you have a preferred sort of style or a preferred format you like working in? Or do you like having that mix of different things?
My only preference for style or format of work is whatever pays the bills.
That's a very honest answer.
I am very happy with my pretty eclectic body of work, because I think well, as a cartoonist, I think doing mini comics and stuff like that is completely unavoidable, because you're not going to only do work when you're getting paid for it. Mm-hmm. So you're not, if you're not getting paid for the work, you have to do work that's very feasible and mm-hmm. doable and plausible on your own, like whether you can staple it yourself and manufacture itself and stuff like that. So that's where all the mini comics come from. And then like doing the larger projects, that's just little opportunities I had here and there. And then nothing, you know, everything that I've done, nothing has ever been to scale, to the scale of Vietnam America. So that was definitely like a huge once in a lifetime opportunity. Yeah.
Well, I mean, based on Vietnam America, your background in terms of your family history plays a big role in your work, but I want to back it up even a little bit more and talk about where you are now. You mm-hmm. grew up in Arizona, right? Or New Mexico?
Well, I was born in South Carolina, mm-hmm. Lived there for the first 14 years, then Arizona for the next 10 years, and then Brooklyn ever since.
How has Brooklyn shaped your work?
You know, honestly, Brooklyn is where I consider where the vast majority of my teaching, where I taught and learned how to do comics, and to a similar extent to do illustration work in general. Because basically, I didn't really start actively buying comics until after, well, into my high school years, but I didn't actually start making comics seriously until after I graduated from college.
Oh, wow. Did you study that in college?
No. I went to the University of Arizona, so there wasn't like a specific arts program or anything. Like, I graduated with Bachelor of Fine Arts, and there was a, you know, your medley of like illustration class, design yeah. classes, painting classes, etc. But there wasn't a single comics class. There wasn't a single cartooning class. So I really, it was a quick, steep learning curve coming to New York.
Well, what was that? What was sort of the catalyst for that? What sort of turned you on to the world of cartoons?
Well, I always knew I wanted to do comics. I mean, although I didn't start professionally trying to do comics until after I graduated from college, my first comic was when I was 10 years old, and it ran four and a half issues.
Wait, tell me about that. I want to know about that.
It was this incredibly, extremely creative title called X Out. I say that completely sarcastically because it was completely derivative. It was just whatever typical 10-year-old boy dreams of. I mean, it was about guys who piloted giant robots and fought other guys in giant robots. That was pretty much it.
I think that's the great start. I mean, I made a lot of angry 10-year-old, like, well, I was maybe a little, maybe I was like 13 or 14, like angry Riot Girl zines.
And stuff. Oh, yeah?
Like everybody
yeah.
sort of acts out their most extreme fantasies at that age. And you guys have robots. I had guitars on a stage.
Yeah. So there you go.
You work with, but I think all of that sort of like superhero, like big dream stuff definitely comes out in Vietnam America. I think at least in the artwork for me, I felt like I do have a limited background in sort of graphic novels, but mm-hmm. I think a lot of the artwork for me recalled that sort of exuberance and excitement that comes with what to me are like superhero comics.
I would like to think that's a direct result of how much love I was putting into that project and how incredibly fortunate and that I felt that I could not only work on that, like, you know, at all, like, but actually work on that during that time of my life, as opposed to doing something like that in my 40s or my 50s or something like that.
Exactly. I mean, we were talking about this before we were recording. I think this is definitely kind of, this is your masterpiece. I'm sure you're going to go on to do much bigger and better things. I'm sure you will. I don't mean to limit you at this point in your career, but it really is the sort of piece that I think if I had made that, I would put it on a shelf and feel like I was done for a really long time.
Well, I did put it on a shelf and felt like I do feel like I'm done, but for completely different reasons. But it's funny, when I was working on it, I kept telling my wife, I was like, I can't imagine doing anything that will be more important than this. And she's like, don't say that. Don't say that. Don't say that. You're only 33. Don't say
it's
that.
It's true.
Don't
I'm sure that. Much more significant things, but it's an incredibly significant thing to produce. So let's get into Vietnam America. Before we start, Vietnam America is a graphic memoir that tells the story of your family's history and leaving Vietnam to come to America. I want to read two reviews that I thought were incredibly apt and incredibly accurate. And I think for people who aren't familiar with your book or who maybe are considering
it. And none of those reviews were written by me, right?
None were written by you.
Anonymously or anything. Okay.
The first one, this is from Library Journal. They said this will be called Mouse for the Vietnam War, and for good reason. Similar premise, clueless American-born son of immigrants confronts a legacy of family pain predating his birth. Similar outcome, a kick-in-the-gut graphic novel. He purposely fragments the plot, shifting points of view, narrative voices, and settings while the reader, as did Tran, must assemble the pieces to learn how his parents became the people he knew. Engaging, challenging, and disturbing, Tran's family memoir belongs in the public and academic libraries. And it's, I mean, that's incredibly high praise and very true. And the next one is from Race Bending, which I thought was an equally point that I wanted to talk about. Vietnam America is an utterly remarkable piece of American literature. If you have ever felt a connection to the immigrant experience, or if you were born of a generation that benefited from the bruises and blood that came before, then this memoir will resonate as literature rarely does. It's pretty high praise. How did it feel to have something that you worked on so hard received really, really well?
I don't know. I'm still processing it, honestly. I mean, it's just so, for the most part, at least for the majority of cartoonists I know, we live such a very solitary, reclusive life and work rhythm. To suddenly put something out there and have complete strangers writing about it in such positive terms has been, I didn't know how to process it because it was so foreign to anything I've ever experienced before in my life. I'm certainly very grateful for it, for sure. And actually, these people who've written these reviews, in particular the race bending one, I met him after the fact and we talked about it, and it's just, I don't know, it's really great. It's always really great when something you work on and you pour so much love and sweat and blood into it that it resonates with someone else, like a complete stranger. So
for people who haven't read it or aren't familiar with it, can you walk us through a little bit of the narrative arc of Vietnam America?
Story-wise or structure-wise? Because those are two pretty different things with
Let's start with the story.
Okay. The story basically is... it's the two main characters are my mom and my father, and the story basically revolves around them tracing their life and all the decisions that they had from being kids to complete adults and refugees in the United States. And it's kind of done through the lens of me as a very clueless, ignorant, snotty little kid, like not really knowing much until suddenly a light bulb goes off in his late 20s and like starts asking questions and starts trying to pry that information out of them. So it's there are actually two story threads, really, that one about my parents, and then there's one about me as I grow older and how I learn about these things, because it wasn't done in a very like romanticized way where I sat down and they're like, this is our story, you know, like things would pop up in my life here and there and that make me kind of raise my eyebrow and be like, what did you just say?
Yeah, and it felt like you had to pull some of that information out from them.
It's pulling teeth. I mean, I had to visit my parents in Arizona, I think, four times during the research of this project, and that was because each time they would just get a little bit more open with their stories. Like, I clearly remember the first time I went back to Arizona to interview my dad, and they knew that's why I was going there.
Yeah.
They knew I was going there because, like, I want to ask questions. I don't think they necessarily knew that was going to be a comic book.
Well, how did you break that to them that you were going to do that, and what was their reaction?
Well, I mean, like I just said, when you're as parents and you have your son who for the first 25 plus years of his life had no interest in your lives and where you came from and what you did,
like every other 25 and under,
like every other youth, suddenly start asking you all these nosy questions, and you're like, why are you asking us these questions? And I said, oh, because I'm thinking about making it into a story. And they're like, no. And then I was like, and actually
just said no,
and that story is gonna be a comic book. And then for my parents, that's like, no way in hell, kind of thing. But I mean, over the process of visiting them a few times, like I mentioned that I did, I think they warmed up to the idea. And what I realized was their initial reaction was fueled by what they conceived as a comic book. You know, my father grew up on books like Tintin and Asterix and Obelisk and stuff like that. So he thought of these really exaggerated, cartoony, like slapstick strips. And I was like, no, just let me show you what I'm working on, and then let me know what you think. And so when I showed them an early draft of it, they realized what I was doing was very serious, and they kind of, I guess, grudgingly allowed me to continue.
Did they get any editing rights? Or did they just put their foot down and say, like, no, you're not talking about this?
Well, no, during the research, they would say things like, I don't want to talk about that. That's none of your business. You know, why are you bringing that up? And that just made me realize that Vietnam America isn't intended to be some type of sensational chronicle of their past. I mean, honestly, there are things that happened to them. There's shit way crazier than what actually made it into the book. And it was edited out, not because I thought they would be uncomfortable with putting it in, but it was edited out because it didn't serve the story. You know, one of the best advice I got before I started Vietnam America, which coincidentally was from the agent who found the publisher for it, he said to me, look, tell the smallest story possible. And that meant editing a lot. And it meant editing things that I really was like, when I first heard the stories, like, oh, this is going to be an incredible scene in the final book. But then when I got actually to the nuts and bolts, I was like, I got to leave this out because this is just tangential and it's not going to help the story.
You know? It's so much harder of an editing process when you're not editing someone else's story. I mean, it's your family's story, and it's also incredibly personal.
Yeah. Definitely.
All right, we're going to talk more about that after the break. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to talk more about Vietnam America.
Cool.
Cane Vineyard and Winery are proud to support Heritage Radio Network, the growing movement to change the way we eat and think about our planet. For more information, go to cane5.com.
Grace Bonney, welcome back to After the Jump. Today, I'm speaking with author and the artist behind the amazing graphic memoir, Vietnamerica, G.B. Tran. Thanks for being here.
And as we established earlier, you can just say cartoonist.
I can just say cartoonist. I have a thing about that word. I know it's really bad. As a non-artist, I feel like maybe it was a weird thing like drilled into me younger that cartooning sounds like a less serious
word. Oh yeah, no. I mean, it totally has a super juvenile. No. I mean, I for the longest time, it's had a very juvenile, lowbrow association.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I have met cartoonists who like try to avoid that word as if they're not going to be taken seriously, and I don't take them less seriously, but I feel like as a non-artist, I'm like, I'm not allowed to say that word. Like, I'm not allowed to talk about that. I just have to call you a fine artist, and that's it. So before the break, we were talking about your parents' involvement in the book, since obviously Vietnamerica deals with their story in a really big way. Were there any parts that you cut out that you kind of wish you could have put back in, or that you missed in particular? Or do you feel like the editing process, you felt really satisfied with it at the end?
No, I really, out of everything, I feel that editing process is the thing I'm most happy with. So than the drawing or the dialogue or the pacing or anything like that. Like, what is in the book I felt really needed to be in the book, and what didn't make in the book I felt really didn't need to be in the book. So I'm super, super happy with that. I mean, there's a lot of material stuff on the cutting room, left on the cutting room floor, and I hope to take that material and do another project with it sooner rather than later, but definitely not in the same emotional vein as Vietnamerica.
Yeah. Well, before the break, I read the review from Ray Spending, or was talking about sort of being able to identify with an immigrant story. Have you heard from anyone else who has a similar family background, or what are the response you've gotten?
No, that's
like that?
Definitely a huge part of the response, because let me ask you, were you born in this country?
Yes.
Okay. Were both of your parents born in this country? And were all four of your grandparents born in this country?
I believe so.
Oh, okay. Yes. Well, you totally just shattered my exception to the rule. But what I've learned when I'm going out and talking about Vietnamerica and doing like author visits and stuff like that is that within a couple of generations, we all are from somewhere else. So immigration is one of its core themes, and I feel like it does resonate with a huge part of the audience, because that's something that they can pick up on. It doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be Vietnamese people or anything like that, but they know or are somewhat close to the immigrant experience. Mm-hmm. And the thing for me is, like, I feel like the immigrant experience is, no matter where you're from or where you're going, it does follow like the same process as far as like emotional stages and stuff like that. And I think that's one of the reasons why Vietnamerica has resonated with a lot of people, regardless of their backgrounds.
And it's funny because I feel like, I mean, I admittedly don't have a huge background with graphic novels or graphic memoirs in particular, but I feel like I haven't seen a lot of people, at least in my age group, and we're in the same general age range, of people really telling stories, especially that involve an immigrant component. I feel like that doesn't get told a lot. Do you feel like that exists?
No, I think now there's a huge, huge, huge is relative. There's a huge portion of comics and graphic novels that does explore that terrain. I mean, and hopefully my book just adds to that incredible great list of books of like Persepolis and even like Mouse and, you know, like You'll Never Know, and a bunch of other books that I'm drawing a blank on right now.
Well, I remember I read Persepolis and loved it. And I remember I think I bought it online, and in the suggested titles, when you buy something online, it tells you like these are similar books. Mm-hmm. There was nothing else that it suggested that was vaguely like it. And I remember thinking, that was years ago, like, aren't there more stories like that? Because it really opened my eyes to the genre as a whole. Yeah. But also, I really love reading biographical and from any sort of story, especially personal family stories, and I could not find a lot like that.
Yeah, no, I think relatively the last few years, memoir, at least as far as comics go, or graphic novels, whichever you want to call them, kind of went through a boom period. And mm-hmm. so a lot of publishers were snatching them up. And, I mean, I certainly feel that the reason why Viet in America found a publisher was because it was kind of riding that wave. Mm. I mean, it wasn't a situation where I sat down one day and was like, okay, what kind of comic can I write to pay the bills? But it was more like I'd been working on it off and on since 2001. And oh, suddenly wow. an opportunity came up where a publisher was interested. And I was like, really?
Oh, great.
Like,
so they came to you.
Well, no. Well, my agent shopped it around.
Oh, okay.
My agent.
I know. Sounds so terrible.
Yeah. No, they shopped around and find a publisher for it. But it was one of those situations where it was, you know, I'd been working on it. It'd been on the back burner for so long. And suddenly, finally, there was an opportunity to bring it to fruition. So.
That's great. Well, I don't. A couple weeks ago on After the Jump, on this radio show, I started sort of a commitment to a series where we're talking about diversity and design, in particular mm-hmm. in my little design niche of products and home goods and things like that. And there's a striking lack of diversity in mm-hmm. there. And how do you feel about sort of visibility for Asian American cartoonists or artists in general? I feel like in my niche, there's a very big issue with that right now. And I have a very good friend who is Chinese American, and she was like, I'm the only Asian person at every conference we go to, and this is a big problem. Yeah. Do you feel that same lack of visibility in your niche?
It's a very complicated question. Well, it's just funny because I'm also in the process of answering this Q&A because I'm going to be part of this indie Asian cartoonist exhibit that's going up at MoCA.
Oh,
not,
wow.
not MoCA cartooning, but Museum of Chinese American okay. art, Chinese art. Because on one hand, you can say that, yes, there's not a great representation of Asian American cartoonists. But on the flip side, it's like, well, that's just within American comics, right? Mm, or okay. North American comics. But personally, I do feel like we're pretty well represented, you know, between me and Gene Yang and, you know, Derek Kirk Kim, mm-hmm. Adrian Tomane, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I do think there is pretty good representation. But I don't know. I'm still kind of processing it because I remember when Viet in America came out and I was getting advice on how to do the marketing for it. Like one of my friends, a great Asian artist himself, Jerry Ma, who does the Secret Identities anthology. He was just like, well, when you start doing the marketing, you just need to decide, do you want to be known as the Vietnamese cartoonist?
Oh.
Or do you want to be known as a cartoonist? And you just really need to know that whichever way you go is going to open certain doors for you and close other doors for you. And yeah, I think I'm struggling with that, I guess.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting I guess I still don't think about that as something that would be closing a door for you. But do you feel like that's actually something that would happen?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't necessarily think so. I think cartooning in general, there's so many little doors I can't open in the first place yes. that there's really, you can't imagine even less being closed. But I mean, I think in the sense of do you always want to hear yourself being described as the Vietnamese cartoonist? Or do you want just described as cartoonist? I have a lot of women friends who are cartoonists. You get yes. really
you're
effing
female,
tired of
yeah.
them being
you're the female
like,
cartoonist. Yeah.
Oh, wow, you're a woman and you do comics? You know, it's like, oh, wow, yeah. you're
I feel like that stuff wears off after a while, though. I mean, I think at a certain point, I only know my own experience. I feel like I got called a female blogger or a short blogger, which as if that has anything to do with the way that I write all the time. And eventually that stopped my height or my gender.
I feel that
important.
Stops when you're in conversation with people who are part of that mm-hmm. medium or that part of that art form or industry, for sure.
That's true.
But for the people who are a little or outside, a couple rings separated from it, then it's just another way, which for them to genuinely, and there's nothing derogatory there.
Yeah.
It's not just, it's just them to further identify you.
Yeah.
And which is totally fine, I think.
Well, I also, congratulations are in order because you were also nominated for a 2012 Eisner.
Yes, I'm officially a non-winner now.
You were nominated, GP. Yeah. Come on. That's a big deal. And you went to San Diego Comic-Con for it,
yes,
right?
I do get to put that little sticker seal on my book now that says it was a nominated.
I think that's a big deal. Congratulations.
Yeah.
So, and when you were there, did you spoke with Scott McCloud, right?
Yeah, it was a crazy...
Tell me about that.
Well, what happened was the Eisner ceremony was on a Friday night. So I literally flew out just to do the Eisner and I went back on Saturday because I was just I talked to my wife and was like, okay, am I going to be more upset if I win the Eisner and I didn't go, or more upset that I went and didn't win the Eisner? Ah. And we figured out it was the latter, so I made the trip possible. So I went out there and we went through the ceremony. And one of the things about that ceremony is, like, when my category was, I guess, it's kind of like the Oscars, I guess, the bigger or more momentous the category, the later in the show it goes or it's announced. So my category was like the third to the last, which means I sat through 2 hours of the Eisners, Lord, watching people win their Eisners.
Oh.
And a part of me was, up to that point, like, I was totally detached from it. But after watching for 2 hours, people giving their acceptance speeches and all that stuff, and just all the great vibe, I couldn't help but start thinking, oh, like, maybe I could win. I could win.
Did you have a speech prepared? That's the most important question.
No, I did not. I didn't have a speech prepared.
A tiny piece of paper.
No, because I went in there assuming that I wouldn't win, which totally is, I don't know. But anyway, so I didn't win. So I was pretty bummed about it at that point, because up to that point, I had been thinking about possibly winning for 2 hours straight, yeah, sitting at a table watching people win. But the next morning, I went to the Comic-Con just to walk the floor for a couple hours before my flight. And I went to this panel, which was an academics panel about, and it was basically analyzing, like, the language of comics and using two examples. And one of them was Lock and Key by IDW. And the other one was Viet America by me.
And what did that feel like? You're the example of something.
I know. Well, I just went there because it's like, oh, cool, I can watch them sit in the audience and see them talk about my book. But then they noticed I was there, and they're just like, hey, why don't you be on this panel? I'm like, really? Because I totally... okay.
It's a pretty great change of events, I think.
Yeah, no, it's great. So it was a really nice little kind of chaser for the Eisner thing, because I got to be on the panel with some really intelligent people saying super intelligent things about my book, which is kind of crazy. But also Scott McCloud was there too, and
tell people, like, who Scott McCloud is for people who aren't familiar.
Scott McCloud probably is best, well, it's, if you've been reading comics for a long time, I think Scott McCloud is best known for Zot. If you're relatively new to comics, Scott McCloud is best known for his series of books talking about the comics language, like understanding comics, making comics. To me, part of the small set of holy Bibles that I go to every time I start a new project is just reading those things, rereading those things from cover to cover. So the opportunity to be sitting beside him on a panel, having him talk with other people about Viet America was really... yeah, I totally watched
it. It's got to be a surreal experience.
Yeah, it totally was a surreal experience. And I felt kind of bad. I mean, I had a great time, and I wish I could have been a little bit more prepared, because when I do author business and stuff like that, yeah, there is preparation that goes into it. You don't just roll out of bed and you're like, okay, I'll talk about my book for an hour.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear you do that. I have been to so many panels where I'm pretty sure people just roll out of bed and
yeah, and me too. And I'm like,
I'm important. I have important things to say.
I don't
want
to be that person. No, because I feel like this is the way I look at it. If someone's going to come to my talk, they're going to give me an hour of their time.
Yes.
And if there's 30 people in the audience, that's 30 hours that I have. And it would be really insulting to them if I didn't prepare and give a good talk. Because it's just like, okay, if I can't spend 2 hours preparing a talk for 30 hours of people listening, then what does that say about me? Like, what does that say about my lack of respect for the people in the audience? You know? So...
I want you on my panel. I'm like, that's the best panel description I've ever heard.
Sorry, a little tangential there.
Well, yeah. Done. So tell me how you really feel about panels. I want to take it away from panels to a much more exciting life change. You have a brand new baby daughter.
Yes.
Aside from completely having no sleep now, mm-hmm, how has that changed the way you work or the things you're thinking of working on? Are you thinking about doing
the way
anything?
It's changed my work is I don't work anymore. I'm slowly getting back to my rhythm now. Like, we feel like every day is a new thing with a child, and when you learn something new, then you can kind of use it to restructure your day and your week rhythms. So I'm finally getting back to work right now. How it's changed my work, it's too early to say.
Yeah.
Honestly. I mean, I can definitely say if I was working on Viet America when my daughter was born, or even when my wife was pregnant, like, Viet America would have been a radically different book.
I'm sure.
And that was one of the main motivations to get it done so quickly, because, like I said, I edited so much information out. I could have kept all the information in, but the book would have been, instead of 300 pages, mm-hmm, it would have been 600 pages. And instead of taking 3 years, it would have taken 5 years or 6 years. And I knew that if I spent that much time on a single project, that my opinion and the way I looked at it would change invariably during that process, mm-hmm, and make me reanalyze it. And like, if my wife had gotten pregnant while we were working on that project, I probably would have thrown it in the trash and started all over, and that would have been horrible, you know? So that's why, yeah. So as far as like how my baby will influence my work, I think that's to to come.
Too early to know. All right, we've got time for one last question. Okay. I want to know, when you're not busy being an amazing cartoonist, what do you like to do around Brooklyn? What are some of your favorite places to eat, hang out, sightsee?
When you're
not with your baby, because maybe you have no free time now.
Wow, that's totally a hypothetical situation, because those moments never exist.
Pre-baby, then post-baby.
I just stay in my neighborhood. I'm totally one of those guys who just loves everything about my neighborhood. I remember when I first...
And what's your neighborhood, people who don't know where you live?
The Williamsburg Greenpoint area.
Nice.
So, and I remember it's so funny, when I first moved to New York 12 years ago, and I would meet cartoonists and artists who lived in Brooklyn, and they just worked at home, and they would never go into Manhattan. And I'd be like, why are you crazy? Why are you living here? And you're paying like so much money for rent, and you don't even go into Manhattan anymore?
Yeah.
And now I'm totally that guy.
You totally get
it. You can't drag me kicking and screaming into Manhattan for anything anymore, because it's just like, my neighborhood is everything I want. Like restaurants, which my mom and I, not my mom, my daughter's mom, which is my wife, we're pretty big foodies, and our neighborhood has really, really wonderful places to eat, and all our friends are in our neighborhood. So if we want to see our friends, they're all in the neighborhood, and all my professional friends are in the neighborhood. So if I want to go see our mutual friend Alex, then I grab some donuts at Peter Pan and swing by the studio and say hi, you know?
Not a bad, and right across from Polly G's.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a bad place. I know, we are in Roberta's right now.
I know, uh-oh.
Before we get in trouble, I should go. But people can find you at gbtran.com.
Gbtran.com. I have a Twitter. It's at Vietnam America. And then I just started a terrible morning illustration blog called Morning Illustration Tumblr.
It's not terrible. I've looked at it. It's definitely worth checking out. Thank you so much for talking with me,
Thank
GB.
You.
And for all of you listening, thanks for listening. And be sure to pick up Vietnam America. It's available at independent bookstores everywhere and on the interwebs. Thanks so much for listening.
Cool. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.